Hey, this is Steve Bloom, and you are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Cinema Geeks. I am one of your Cinema Geeks, Optimus Solo, and joining me today, after a small hiatus, is Miss Hard Candy Mandy.
I'm back, bitches!
Okay. Movie Revolt Dan. Hello, Dan.
Hey, I am also back.
Bitches.
Because from last time, though.
From last time. With no hiatus. And also, Fridley Sent. Hello, Matt.
Yeah, I don't feel so good.
That's not funny.
That's what she claimed as far as her reason for missing her speed.
Bitch, I had a 101.1 temp. I was sick like the entire week. Don't judge.
Oh, mine wasn't a dig at Amanda. It was more of the movie related.
Ah, that works too. For those of you that were wondering what we were going to cover today, we got a actual current movie review that we are going to do in true Geekcast fashion. There was a comic book movie, guys. That happens every once in a while, and we usually cover it. So we're going to be talking all about Avengers Infinity War here on episode 171. Obviously, most of you have already seen the film, or at least probably have seen the film. It's made how much, Dan? I think you said like $9 billion.
I think they had to make a new number for it, didn't they? It was like a gajillion.
There's a symbol. It's like a symbol formally known as. I guess one thing that we will get out of the way, since it is a little bit later and the movie was released about, not quite a month ago, but a couple weeks have passed for sure. This conversation that we're going to have today may include spoilers. We're not going to have a non-spoiler section and a spoiler section. We're just going to have a free-form kind of discussion about the movie in general. And if something is going to come up that is spoiler-related, we're just going to go with the flow and talk about it. So if you haven't seen the movie, we would suggest going to see it first before you listen to this episode, because we may spoil one or two things along the way. But at least we're not doing what I saw happen on Twitter. I don't know if any of you guys saw this or had it happen in your like circle of friends or people you follow on Twitter, but there was literally like a guy out there that it was like 2 days after the movie had been released, so it was like Saturday or Sunday. I think it was Sunday. And he was intentionally posting spoilers. And I know a lot of people do that. But his reason was because if you hadn't seen the movie in the opening 2 days, you weren't a big enough fan to deserve not having it spoiled for you.
Who is this? Do you know this person?
I don't remember the handle.
Sorry about that. Sorry, I'm sorry.
I don't remember the handle. It was not Movie Revolt Dan. But I was like, man, I guess, you know, you don't have you can't use excuses as far as like work or life or anything of that nature. If you're a Marvel fan, you're seeing this opening day or the second day. I guess there's a 2 day grace period, but we've given you like over a 2 week grace period, so I guess we're not quite as douchey as that guy was. So we're gonna go around here first and just kind of get our general thoughts, and then we're gonna start breaking it down and getting go in more detail. But I guess my first question for you guys is, you know, obviously this was a culmination of 10 years worth of Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, 18 previous films before this one, and lots of storylines. I mean, more than 24 superheroes that we've been introduced, that we've seen different parts of their characterization, storylines, etc. Some have interacted with each other, some have not. So this is a big kind of culminating event, so to speak. And Dan, we'll start with you. Was the payoff worthy of that much buildup? Did you feel like you got the right dose of epicness, of grand stage, of kind of tying things together in this big universe, and kind of just general thoughts of the movie when you saw it?
I think so. I think the payoff was certainly worth it, because I think what that 10 years has done specifically is, within that time, what Marvel has, I think, succeeded at really well is, you know, even when some pieces of their movies don't work, whether it's their villains or what have you, ultimately, what has worked this entire time is their ability to build their characters. You know, their heroes, from the Guardians of the Galaxy to Spider-Man to, you know, Iron Man, Captain America. And I think with that, that was showcased here. You know, you build up those characters to a certain point, even those that have only had a film or two. And when you get to see them interact, there's just a joy within that, because you've kind of been invested into their stories. They all have, like, their own unique personalities. And seeing some of them clash, seeing some of them kind of in a way work together. You know, something like Captain America and Black Panther, and how their personalities are similar, and how that interaction goes. I thought that was intriguing, and I think the biggest thing, of course, is knowing that with this, it was all on the shoulders, of course, of Thanos. You know, the character that was hinted at the end of the first Avengers film, the person who's supposed to be behind many of these storylines. You know, the chase for the Infinity Gems or stones or whatever they're calling them nowadays. And you know, would he be worth the wait? And I think that was what I was most concerned about, because Thanos is, you know, a character that his motivations when it comes to the comic books, I wasn't sure if they would necessarily work with the general audience. It's a little bit different. It's a little bit, you know, his desire to kind of court death, and it can work in the pages of a comic. And some, I didn't know if it would work on screen, and what they did, I think smartly enough, was adjust those and kind of make it more palatable. And I think make him in a way a better villain, because he is a little bit, he's not sympathetic, but he is the hero of his own story, where previously he's more an apathetic character, where he just, you know, he just didn't care. Like, he wasn't necessarily, he was evil, but he was more so like he had a discontent for the rest of, you know, the world, or other than himself. He just wanted what he wanted, and that was that. So I thought they did a good job of establishing him as, you know, a threat, a physical threat, one that you felt like he would need this entire cast of 12,000 characters to fight off, but also just, you know, they smartly, I think, made it his movie and made him one of the better Marvel villains, with, you know, especially those that have only been in one main film. So yeah, I ended up walking away. You know, I wouldn't say it's Marvel's best film. I still think I think the highs of the first Avengers may be a little higher. It's much more of a joyous movie, but I thought ultimately, you know, I walked away very satisfied with what they put together.
You know, Dan mentioned the Avengers, obviously the first film, and Amanda, I think that was probably the last time that we had this much of a build-up in this universe. Like, obviously, the first time we were going to get the Avengers together was a huge build-up and an epic event that people were looking forward to. I think this is probably the closest we've come since then of having kind of that big culminating event. Did you feel like it paid off and lived up to the hype that everybody was kind of having around it as it was leading up to the release? And what were your general thoughts of the movie overall?
I would say that the build-up definitely did something for this film. I mean, we all have characters that we love maybe a little bit more than others. We all have characters that we really wanted to see match up in this film. So I think it gave us what we wanted, but it left me wanting so much more of it. Like, this felt to me like a mid-ground movie or a connective movie. It didn't seem like it had real closure or anything. It was more like, what's next? I want to see what's next now. Like, this is not done. I know this isn't over, so give me what I want to see. And so it's going to be hard waiting for the next installment, definitely, but it gets me excited for Captain Marvel and some stuff we're gonna see coming here pretty soon. But I was definitely positive on this film. I didn't feel that positive leaving the theater just because it was so fucking sad. But Peter Parker...
Did you spend 30 minutes in your car in the parking lot crying?
I feel like I should have. I was just like, wow, I don't know. I don't know how to feel but sad right now, so...
Matt, she kind of almost painted a picture of something like The Empire Strikes Back there. Is this The Empire Strikes Back of the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Yeah. I don't think there's anyone denying that, though, right? Like, absolutely. Like, it ends on a downbeat more than any Marvel movie ever has. Like, I mean, even ones that end, like, pretty negative, like, say, I don't know, like, Cap 2, like, there's still a glimmer of hope at the end. If anything, this one ends on, like, an even worse thing.
Right.
Where it's like, oh, man, that was really bad, and then here's an after-credit scene where it's even worse. Look at that, guys.
Matt, what were your overall thoughts of the film, and did you think it lived up to the hype?
Oh, absolutely. They went harder than I ever expected. I would argue it's better than the original story. It had me way more excited. I think they did an amazing job. I don't know. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but like I got real hyped for it. Especially when we did our little March Madness brackets. Because it turned out that, like, my opinions were very different than everyone else's opinions, and I was looking for, you know, a good Avengers movie, especially after Avengers 2 wasn't great and Civil War wasn't called the Avengers. So I'm glad to have a new Avengers movie and be very proud to go and see it.
Dan, have you read the original story in the comics, and would you agree with Matt that it's maybe a better take on that story?
I think so. I think in a way it makes a little bit more sense in some of the things that happen, like the motive, the justifications for some of like Thanos' actions, like why he would allow certain people to live, like, you know, when you have the ultimate power like he does. It, though it's not really, I would say, even fully an adaptation of the Infinity Gauntlet, because it's really like the ending of this movie is the ending of the first issue of the Infinity Gauntlet. It's more of an adaptation of the Thanos quest. But I thought, you know, like I mentioned, with the adjustment of motivations, it made what he was doing, his actions, make more sense. Like why he would not, for example, kill Thor at the beginning of the film, because, you know, his desire wasn't to kill for, you know, pointless reasons. Like he would kill when he thought it was necessary. And, you know, he even, you know, leaving it up to chance at the end for his ultimate, you know, choice, rather than like picking and choosing who he was, you know, and thinking he was more of a hero of his own story would justify that, like why he would allow certain heroes to live instead of like killing everyone. So I do think it fixes some of the problems per se of that. I think maybe one thing that may have done a little bit better, but obviously it's a lot easier in a comic, is maybe juggle and give some of the characters more characters, you know, moments. But there's also a lot of weird things that go on in that story that you forget about until I went back and reread it. There's like stuff that takes place on Earth. There's a lot of strange things. But yeah, I do think if you watch this movie and go to read Infinity Gauntlet, I don't necessarily think a lot of people would like think to be like, what is this? This is very different.
Gotcha, gotcha. Yeah, I haven't read that one, but I'm intrigued to see the differences. That you mentioned the opening sequence with Thor. I got to tell you, when I was sitting in the theater, I did have a moment during that sequence where it was like, it was almost the same type of feeling that I had at the end of the first season of Game of Thrones. Like, we were like 10 minutes into the movie, and I was like, I'm done. If this goes this way, I'm done. Like, I am not wanting to watch any more of this if they're going to kill Thor right away. But obviously, luckily, I didn't have to leave the theater. Not that I would have anyways, but I did have a moment there where I was like, oh, I don't like where this is going at all. Speaking of characters, we brought it up a little bit that they're juggling a lot of different characters and a lot of different superheroes that we've been introduced, as well as supporting cast, etc. That was another question that probably a lot of people had, because obviously we had with Avengers, you know, the first time where we saw a bunch of those guys in the same movie, but this is like that on steroids because of the sheer number of characters that we're going to see in this film. And I was wondering what your guys' take was as far as characters that you thought worked well in this film, whether it was because they added to their character arc overall throughout the MCU, whether it was, you know, characterization moments or just moments that you liked from those characters, or maybe characters that didn't work as well. And then kind of overall, in a general sense, how do you think they did with balancing the sheer number of characters that they were dealing with here? And did it work 100%, or did you feel like some got left behind? Amanda, what did you think as far as, did you have standouts that you really enjoyed watching in this film, or how did the character balance work?
I think Star-Lord and Stark were really awesome to see together. And then also Thor with the Guardians was great. But I didn't feel like I got enough of any of their matchups. I don't think you're going to, it's not possible for you to feel satisfied, I don't think, with what you get with all these characters being thrown in together and not getting enough of them crossing over.
Dan or Matt, do you agree that it wouldn't be possible to be satisfied with the amount of characters they're trying to stuff into this, even though it is a long film, but just one film?
I think it would. I think you're not going to be able to have everyone have a complete arc. You're going to have to pick and choose, like, who are you really going to focus in on to make it more meaningful, unless you make an 18-hour movie. So I thought it made sense in the way of, like, who they partnered with who to get the most out of those moments. Like, I mentioned Captain America and Black Panther and, like, Scarlet Witch. I thought what was smart in the sense of grouping all those people together, because they're soldiers, you know, there's a war. They're not really focused on in those moments about their internal struggles or you know, what they need to do is their personal stakes there. They have a mission, they need to accomplish it. Like, it's all about business and doing what needs to be done. So I understood why with their story, it was, you know, it was more action based because those were the stakes that they had. You know, they were the type of people that put things aside and focus in on things. And they'll of course make moments for jokes because that's what you have to do. But where, you know, Tony Stark and I think Doctor Strange had a little bit more back and forth because they're the two people with the biggest egos in the room, in every room that they're in. So what happens when they clash? And I thought, you know, knowing this has been this 10 years, it all started with, you know, Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr., and Iron Man, making him the focal point or making his story a little bit more the focus, I thought was smart, as well as Thor. But yeah, I thought the choices made sense of like who they decided to focus on more so than others.
Matt, what do you think? Do you think the balance was all right, or do you agree that those that were, I kind of like what Dan is saying, like those that didn't get the more kind of character arc moments were in the part of the story or in the proper setting where that wasn't necessary or that was not possible because of, like Dan saying, the battle and that type of thing? Did they do a good job of kind of positioning people accordingly, or do you think they could have done better as far as giving us more from certain characters?
Oh, I think they did a magnificent job. I love it. I think Dan's really right about putting people in their place. And what's great about all of that is like the two, I don't know, like the character areas that like I enjoyed the most haven't even been mentioned yet. Because like I absolutely love like the hidden romance of Vision and Scarlet Witch, as well as everything they did with Tom Holland for that whole dang movie. He was so good. I will say one area where I feel like they messed up, which is the most easy to overlook, is Wong, who was like incredibly important for like 30 minutes, and then he was just like, "All right, guys, I'm going home," and they're like, "Yeah, sure, see you," and then like didn't hear anything from him for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, that like, is true.
It was weird. Like, he should have been like, "I need to be like." It wasn't even like I need to stay there to defend the thing because the thing wasn't there.
He's going to be in the Wong solo film. That's
right. Oh,
that's
man. Right. I hope. I'll watch it.
You know, you guys are bringing up a couple of different relationships and things that we've seen that kind of planted in other movies or maybe even explored in a little bit more depth, as well as some new dynamics that we've seen. Like Dan mentioned, obviously we get Doctor Strange and Iron Man, which is a combination we haven't seen before. Amanda mentioned Thor with the Guardians. And it seems like you guys are in favor of those relationships and kind of how it worked and kind of seeing those for the first time as far as the MCU goes. I was curious as far as some of the other stuff because, and Matt touched on it a little bit, we had the Vision and Scarlet Witch dynamic. We had the kind of the reaction to Civil War where we have a little bit of maybe not interaction between, but the relationship between Iron Man and Captain America. You have Hulk, who had obviously had a previous connection with Black Widow. You obviously had the idea that Captain America and Bucky, you know, had a whole film and a whole lifetime of a relationship to build off of. How do you guys think those worked, and do you agree with those that got more time, those that got less time? Did it feel awkward? Because I know a couple people have complained a little bit about brushing over maybe the first time Hulk sees Black Widow or brushing over the first time Captain sees Bucky. Do you think there was room in this movie to explore those moments a little bit more, or do you think it was unnecessary? Amanda, start with you.
I would have liked to have seen those moments, definitely. I did think it was a little weird. There, he was like, "Hey, I've been gone for a while." And she's like, "All right, down to business." There wasn't any exchange of emotion there. And I get, you know, things were getting pretty hairy, but be that as it may, you're still a human. You still have emotions towards other humans, so I would have liked to see that.
Did you have any that you liked more so than, I mean, I know you mentioned obviously seeing Thor with the Guardians. Was there any other that stood out with you from a character moments or any individual characters that really stood out to you over the course of the film?
As far as their interactions go, or just characters?
Just individual characters or reactions between two or any of that type of stuff.
I think that seeing the relationship more between Thanos and Gamora was pretty heavy. And also seeing more of Nebula was pretty cool. Seeing her, like, the torture scene with her was pretty crazy. And now knowing, you know, the bond that the sisters have, it was pretty hard seeing some of that stuff. So I like that we did get a deepening of some of these relationships.
Matt, what do you think? Did they do a good job on which ones that they did kind of spend some time in, like the Gamora Nebula, or obviously you said you liked the Vision and Scarlet Witch, but do you think any of those other ones were glossed over a little bit too quickly?
Oh, man. I never once had that thought of, like, oh, that didn't feel natural, or, oh, like, I would have wanted more, other than the persistent, I would have wanted more of everything, just because it's, I was so enamored with this movie. Like, I do really enjoy the Thanos family and how they go deeper into all of that. That was pretty interesting and fun. Really, I think the one that hit me the most was Iron Man and Spider-Man. Like, just how much they've come from that, like, hug, no, I'm just getting the door, to the fucking hug they share at the end of this movie. Like, that is, I mean, clearly character development between the two of them. Like, and they right. did an amazing emotional job to show that distance they've traveled. I don't know. I think I disagree with Amanda on, well, one, like, do we know that Bucky and Cap haven't seen each other at all? Like, I mean, they're both hanging out in Wakanda. I imagine they would have seen each other, even if they weren't, you know, living with each other.
It seemed, I got the impression from both the Black Panther and some of these films that they were keeping him somewhat hidden from everybody and somewhat secretive, but was it more common knowledge to the rest of the Avengers that he was there the whole time? I guess I didn't know that for sure.
Yeah, I guess they don't really explain that, and that would be nice, but at the same time, what are they going to cram in here? I think that if I'm going to give leeway to anyone not having, like, a normal emotional connection, it's going to be Black Widow and the Hulk. One, because Black Widow's kind of been trained from her earliest of life to not have emotions and not show emotions. And then,
but
like,
she shows him with Hulk, though. She, like, let him in. So there was no even, like, flicker behind her eyes whatsoever.
I mean, did they? Like, because here's the thing that I kind of disliked about the relationship in the previous movies was it seemed less, like, loving and affectionate and more like, I need to be the one that bring the Hulk down because someone needs to do that and the Hulk likes me. Like, I never really, like, felt like it was a super romantic connection. It felt more like a relationship out of necessity.
What about what she shared with him as far as her reproductive situation? I feel like that was something that you wouldn't share with somebody you're just, you know, you're the security blanket for.
It also seemed like they alluded to some things when Hulk is, blasting off into space at the end of the one of the previous films, that there was seemed to be some emotional connection there that she was feeling during that scene, during that sequence.
Yeah, I'm not saying that they don't like each other or even love each other. I'm just saying they're not a PDA type of people.
Right.
They're not the loving embrace. Oh, I haven't seen you. Oh, you hang up first. No, you. Like, that's not their relationship.
I didn't expect them to go to, like, a teenage running across the beach into each other's arms moment, but something, like, her be pissed at him or something. I don't know.
So you're just looking for some type of reaction rather than there's a battle going on, I don't have time to talk to you type thing.
Yeah.
Matt, you can keep going with that thought.
I mean, where am I going?
Oh, I thought, I didn't know if you had any, I didn't know if I cut you off or let you finish that thought. Dan, do you want to jump in here? Do you have any reactions to the Hulk Black Widow stuff? Or kind of the other one I was interested to get your take on is, you know, bouncing off of Captain America Civil War, where you have this big division between the Avengers and kind of, you know, both sectioning off. Do you feel that it's good enough, I guess, excuse that we have this big battle going on, so we're not going to deal with that type thing? Or do you feel like they could have done something with that?
Like, I don't know if it's an excuse, maybe it's a compliment, but I feel like they're saving the, like, inner relationships, like those moments for the next film. Because you realize, like, the, you know, the original Avengers are some of the only ones that are left. Right. It seems like that piece, like that Tony Stark piece and Captain America, like, that's, I feel like, is the finishing piece of both of their arcs, so it makes sense to me of why you keep them separated. Mm-hmm. and then, like, the closing moments will be that team coming back together in order to overcome and defeat Thanos in whatever way they do next issue, and I could next issue geez next next movie, and I could see too. I do think, like, I wouldn't have mind if there was a little bit more exploration of the Black Widow Banner relationship, especially, you know, they even hinted at it within Ragnarok a little bit. But I have a feeling, again, that'll probably be a piece of what happens with the next film. And, like, I could see her being the person that actually brings the Hulk out for whatever reason. Either it's through, like, her, you know, being able to, you know, convince the Hulk to coming out, or she's in danger, so that... whatever reason that that may be. But I did think it was interesting that, like, that there, a lot of that drama was not really focused in on. And, like, it had, also part of me had me worried when I honestly thought, like, oh man, Iron Man's gonna die in it at the end, you know, where you see him get stabbed. I'm like, oh man, that's gonna be, I was like, wow, that's a bold move. And I was a little bit disappointed because there wasn't that closure there, so I'm kind of happy that didn't happen.
Yeah,
but it does feel like, you know, this all, you know, this is one part of a, you know, a two part movie. So a lot of that, you know, certainly a lot of that is unsaid, and there's probably a little bit more that they could have explored. But I kind of understand why, and I think making you want it more is not necessarily a bad thing. Depending on, you know, for me it's not, but I could see for some where you feel a little cheated in having to wait another movie to see that. You know, that come to its conclusion.
I just think you're smart, Dan, because everything you're saying makes sense to me and stuff that I didn't think about beforehand. But another question I wanted to ask you before we move on to the next part here, going back to Vision and Scarlet Witch, do you feel like that the writers and directors, et cetera, the people behind the scenes, thought that those other relationships that we had just been talking about were already established enough? Like, we already kind of know what's going on with Black Widow and Hulk. We already kind of know the rift between Captain America and Iron Man and some of the other ones that we've talked about. Like, some of those were already established enough in those other films, so this was a way to establish more of the Scarlet Witch Vision, which maybe hadn't been developed as much. Or do you feel like they spent too much time with that and could have cut away some of that time to give to some of these other characters?
I think it depends on how you tend to like to view your films, because, like, you know, as someone who likes serialized storytelling, as someone who reads comic books, and someone who, like, you know, is used to this, I understand that. But I could see for some people who think, like, when it comes to a film, that it should be a complete piece and not one piece of an ongoing thing, why for some it wouldn't work. But I think, you know, we allow serialized storytelling for all other forms of fiction, from novels to comics to TV shows. So why not films? But, you know, if you're a purist or want organically construct everything, maybe that wouldn't work for you, or not wanting to watch 18 movies or whatever it is in order to understand many pieces of this. So, yeah, a lot of those things, I think there's a lot of things going into this that are already established. And if you're not okay with that, I mean, I think that's more of a, you know, obviously a subjective thing, but I thought, to me, it focused on the more important things, and it didn't feel like it was being redundant, and for me, I prefer that.
All right. Last couple things character-wise, I want to flip it to the other side. I know we already talked a tiny bit about Thanos, et cetera, but I want to get your guys' take, because obviously, like Dan said in the opening, some of the complaints that we've heard over the years for a couple of the different Marvel films here and there has been about the villains and if they were effective or not. So we get a dose of villainry here. We get, obviously, the main bad guy here, Thanos, but we also do get the Black Order and those kind of minions that are involved in that. Amanda, how do you think the villains worked in Infinity War overall? Were they believable? Were they intimidating? And what did you like and dislike about the villain aspect of the film?
I loved Thanos, and I loved that you felt for him. Like, you kind of... like, I was starting to believe in his cause and him, and as much awful shit that you know that he's done, in this you really felt for his cause. So I liked that. As much as we hated Thanos, it made you question that and kind of get on board with him and, I don't know, kind of root for him a little bit.
You're rooting for genocide.
Sort of. But as far as his, like, little, the Black Order or whatever, his little minions, they were not as effective for me. The only one that really was the Squidward guy.
Ebony Maw.
That got sucked out the ship. He was pretty intimidating. He was crazy, and he looked freaky, and his voice was scary. The other two were just way too heavily CGI'd. And I really didn't care about him.
I wanted to get, because obviously Amanda and I are coming in with not as much comic book knowledge and not as much maybe superhero knowledge as Dan and Matt, you guys are. I'm wondering if this is something that is a more effective I guess, quadri of villain minions for somebody that knows the backstory or knows these characters compared to someone who's coming from an outsider. Because I kind of felt the same way as Amanda. I loved Thanos, and obviously a lot of times when we're talking about these movies, if you can have a villain where you somewhat, even if you don't agree with their means or their methods, that you can somewhat understand where they're coming from and you kind of get the logic pattern, obviously those are a lot more effective, and I think they did that wonderfully with Thanos. But when it comes down to these four guys, and I'm going to, or three guys and a girl, and I'm going to say one of them terribly, but we have Proxima Midnight, Ebony Maw, Cole Obsidian, and the last one I'm not going to be able to say right, Chorus Glaive, something of that nature. Is that something that requires more knowledge to appreciate those characters? Because I kind of felt like, Amanda, that they were somewhat generic outside of maybe the two, Proxima Midnight and Ebony Maw. I think we're okay, but the other two just seemed completely generic CGI bad guys to me. Matt, let's start with you. Did you have previous knowledge of any of those characters, and did it make those scenes more effective for you?
Oh, I have no idea if these characters existed outside of these movies. I don't remember seeing them ever. But I think that really they just needed them from a storytelling standpoint to be like, because Thanos can only be at one place at a time.
Right.
So they're like, well, for action economy, we need to add a couple of minions.
That makes sense. Although he did seem to get around pretty easily at the end of the film, as far as from place to place.
I can't imagine why.
Dan, what did you think? Did you have more knowledge of these characters, or are these characters that existed outside of the movie? I assume they are.
Yeah, they're from the Infinity storyline. That's a little bit, which is weirdly younger than the actual Marvel Universe itself. It's written by Jonathan Hickman. And they, within that, they have much more story. Like, two of the characters are actually married. The one character that's, I can't think of his name, that has telekinesis, he actually is more magic-based in the actual comic itself, and they have much more backstory, there's much more character to them. They are really actually kind of intriguing characters, the way they're able to build them up. But with this, as Matt said, I think they're James Bond henchmen, they're glorified henchmen. They're there just to identify as a physical threat, but they're much more about Jaws in whatever Bond movie he's in outside of the fact that he's a tall dude with bite things. And that's really kind of what they're there for. I mean, in a perfect film, maybe if this was, we got a little bit more, we'd get a little bit more backstory. As I mentioned, like the two of the characters are married. That's not even mentioned in this. You'd think, a combination of like 12 words for the most part. So yeah, as full characters, they're not, but they're plot devices for the most part. And maybe they could have done a little bit more to make that a little bit more effective, especially with like to kind of give you a better idea of like what exactly they're bringing to the party. I think I prefer them than just, seeing more of the Chitauri show up or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I do think Proxima Midnight kind of had a cool look, and I think they did a decent job with Ebony Maw as far as the counter to Doctor Strange, I guess, so to speak, or kind of that interaction that they had towards the beginning of the movie to kind of show someone that had kind of in that same world as far as the powers and the telekinesis and that type of thing. So I thought that character was cool. I thought it was unfortunate that he was the first one that was out of the movie, but I guess that is going to happen in a war type film like this. I want to give you guys each a chance, just anything character related before we kind of move on to more of the story and some of the elements like the visuals and the humor and that type of stuff. So anything that you guys didn't get to talk about character wise, ones you liked, ones you didn't like, favorite character moments of that type of thing, or anything in general. Amanda, anything you didn't get off your chest as far as a character you really enjoyed from the film?
No, I liked all of them.
You like all of them? Every single one?
Except for those bad guys we talked about.
All right. Matt, what about you?
I really liked Ebony Maw, and I wish that he would have gotten an action figure. And I'm sad, since he died, he's like a way less likely. Or probably died. Who knows? I mean, maybe he just formed a bubble and he just couldn't get back to that light speed ship. But
he's
like,
Princess
it's totally.
Leia.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he is, though. I mean, he was definitely using something similar to the Force, right?
True.
Like, so maybe he's flying out there and we'll see him in Guardians 3 or whatever. Who knows?
If a film did that, like, if there was a scene with him floating back, oh, I can't even imagine.
If any movie's going to have a guy get blown out of a ship and then hit another ship's windshield and then be a villain, it's definitely Guardians.
Dan, what did you think? Any other characters that you wanted to highlight that, or just performances from an acting standpoint that you thought were fantastic?
Well, speaking of characters in the Guardians, I did pretty much love all the interaction between Thanos, not Thanos, Thor, and all the Guardians, especially Peter Quill. Like that, those were some of the like the funnier moments within this that felt right, you know, just like how they interacted with one another. And I forget what was said, but he's like, "That sounds made up." It's like all words are made up. But I don't know why that line really stuck with me, but it did. I did, and then this is maybe more plot related, but I did find it interesting that a lot of the biggest plot like pieces were hinged upon like the relationships of these characters, whether it was Scarlet Witch and Vision, Gamora and Peter Quill, you know, even Gamora and Nebula, like, and like how it was all about like them, their willingness to save or not save them for whatever reason. And I could see for some, like if those relationships aren't ones you care all that much about, you know, the Vision and Scarlet Witch, for example, there wasn't a lot of time spent with that previously. You know, we got a little bit in Civil War, but I thought Elizabeth Olsen sold it really well. I thought this was the best performance she actually put in as Scarlet Witch. It helped that she dropped the accent. I don't care why. It just makes more sense. It's kind of like Halle Berry did for Storm, even though that didn't make that any better. But that's that's besides the point. But I thought, like, she really sold it. And, too, like, I thought, I mean, the character of Scarlet Witch has become, you know, really sympathetic and considering, like, everything she's gone through within these, from her brother dying to, like, accidentally killing, you know, all those people, you know, in Civil War. So I felt like it's, and even how Vision calls it out, like how it's unfair that this is something she has to do. I thought that like she was much more of a bigger piece of this than I expected going into it, which makes sense because, you know, Elizabeth Olsen is a pretty great actress. So I thought that was worked really well. And there's another point I wanted to bring up, but it slipped my mind.
I think one of the other things that I was kind of impressed with was the amount that they propelled two or three characters that I had already, well, one of them I had already liked and one of them I was kind of indifferent to, but I thought this movie elevated them big time to kind of some of my favorites in the series and kind of the most intriguing going forward. I thought they did a remarkable job with both Thor and Doctor Strange as far as, and I know I'm not the first person who says that, a lot of people have said that about the film, but I just agree with all those people that are saying that. I think they did a lot for those two characters and kind of propelling them up the list as far as most interesting or most intriguing characters in this universe, or at least moving forward. I thought that was impressive. And then like Matt said, Tom Holland was fantastic in the movie overall, so I really enjoyed that. I could have maybe used a little bit more from the likes of someone like a Black Panther or a Captain America, but we just got Black Panther film, and like Dan had mentioned, they're kind of in a different type of setting within this film that's not going to allow for that, so I can kind of understand why. And we've already had three Captain America films, so not that you necessarily need a whole lot more of that character building, but I thought it was just kind of interesting the way that they kind of elevated Thor and Doctor Strange, for me at least.
Speaking of Captain America, Red Skull showing up, that was like a legitimate, like holy, you know, moment for me. Like I was not expecting that at all, and I thought it also kind of makes sense. They made him kind of look like Death to begin with, and calling back, I think, to the comic origins. So I was happy to see him. I don't know if we'll ever see him again in any shape or form, but it was kind of cool that, you know, that they brought that. Now for the next Avengers, they just need to get Abomination. From the, you know, Hulk movie everyone forgets exists, and it'll put that together.
I thought the other thing that was kind of well done and executed as far as the Red Skull thing was how dark those scenes were. So at first it's like, is that Red Skull? Like, I think Amanda and I were looking at each other like, is that who we think it is type thing? So I thought that was pretty effective as well. Dan, you had mentioned a moment that was funny to you, and obviously humor plays a big part in the MCU. You know, obviously a lot of people kind of equate the MCU to lighter, more comical, entertaining fare. And certain movies have had humor that has worked more than others. I was wondering what your guys' take was on the humor overall, the type of humor, and I guess maybe the hit or miss ratio. Like, did it work for you overall? Was there some that really stood out to you, or was there some that you kind of felt were not your style of humor? Amanda, did you find this movie as funny as, let's say, maybe like the Guardians standalone films?
I mean, it was pretty close. It's been a while since we've seen this now, so it's kind of hard for me to pick out moments.
Matt, what about you? How did the humor work for you overall, and was there any standout jokes for you? Because I have one, and I just feel bad that it's the one, because it's going to make me sound like an immature juvenile.
Oh, man.
Is it the nut chin part?
Yeah, I could not stop laughing at the nut chin, or the ball sack chin.
Wow. Like, I totally forgot about that until just now. I loved the humor. They did a good job because it's a very down movie. Like, it's a 100% downer movie, like, by the end. But, like, they did a good job of, like, hitting you with a little bit of humor every so often to make sure you're not just, like, drained by the end. Like, it's not like Old Boy where I needed to, like, at the end of Old Boy, I needed to take a shower. I felt so just down in the dumps. But this one, they did a way better job. I mean, maybe, you know, not so much for Amanda, but at least for me, like, I wasn't happy by the end of it. I wasn't cheering. But I also, like, I still could enjoy the moments, like, all of the character interactions, right? We've mentioned a dozen times now that Thor and the Guardians was, like, just choice. And Doc Strange and Iron Man, like, just being bumping heads. But all of it, like, Spider-Man making retro references is so great. Like, I don't know. Like, I loved what they did with the humor. I never once felt out of place. Like, I know a lot of people complain about these movies, like, ah, it was too much humor. Especially, like, in the Guardians ones, which we've made the comparison to, because they're in it. But, like, I never once was like, I don't know about these jokes.
I was completely impressed with the number of jokes I felt like landed. Like, I don't have any that stuck out to me that was, like, really. I mean, there might have been some that weren't as funny, but I didn't have a single one that was like, oh, that's lame or that's immature or that's, I mean, if you can pull off a ball sack joke and I don't find it immature or lame, I guess, in that moment just because of the way it was delivered, I guess you're doing something with that. Dan, what did you think of the humor overall? And I guess another question, too, is how many films do we have to see Drax in before it becomes believable that Batista is that funny?
I don't know. I guess one for me. After that, I was pretty set into it. I thought the humor also, like, even when I wasn't always laughing, although I was laughing more than I wasn't, it just felt necessary because it's like I just need some joy within this. And like you mentioned, Tom Holland, like I loved like when they were, was it like Magic Kick? Like I thought just the comedicness, you know, from like you're embarrassing me in front of the wizards. I mean, I'm not gonna just try to quote everything, but I just thought like how they were kind of. Just the fact that you're having, like, you know, Spaceman and a guy who looks like Grimace and all this, and just calling it out, I think makes it work that much, much better. And, you know, even, and how the all the jokes felt appropriate for the characters, even, you know, even like Captain America getting the opportunity to have a joke where it was like, you know, I am Groot and I am Steve Rogers. It just fits that those characters, which again, it goes back to what I said in the beginning, where that's what made these movies work, is that they are able to, you know, understand the characters and why people and the appeal of them. So yeah, those are some of the moments for me. And I never felt like a joke was out of place. And eventually when we got to the point that we did, I think that, you know, they dialed back and were able to separate, you know, when things got serious, they got serious and I never felt that there were jokes that undercut any moments or, you know, downplayed a serious moment where it shouldn't have been there. So,
yeah, I definitely agree with that. I was just impressed, like I said, and like you guys are saying, the way that it felt natural and the way that, you know, some films have been criticized because it went back to the same joke or the same type of joke too many times, or something was getting old or something was too juvenile. And I just felt like it's weird because there were so many jokes put in here and there were so many references, but it all just still felt natural to me, which I was impressed at. And yeah, I believe that Batista is that funny, but I still have to think back and be like, this is Batista that has that good of comedic timing and delivery of these lines. And I'm impressed every time, just the same. Real quick, before we get into any story, you know, and kind of plot points and that type of stuff, wanted to get your guys' take on more of the visuals, whether it's visual effects, whether it's CGI, whether it's ability to follow like the action and the fight sequences. Matt, how did you feel like from a visual standpoint watching the film worked for you overall?
You know, like when there's too much of a shaky cam, too much of a moving camera, like, and it's hard to follow a scene, I'm one of the first people to speak up. I hate that. Like, that's like one of the biggest problems with like the Star Wars prequels, where it's like it's zooming up on people's faces and just flashing light, and it's like I'm not seeing anything. But like this movie like does some amazing things. Like like the one-on-one between Thanos and Iron Man, where Iron Man's nano armor is changing with every move the two guys make. Like, it was so well done, so like perfect, like very easy to follow. Like, I loved it. It was so good. Like, they really spotted on the fight scenes in this movie.
Amanda, I know you had mentioned off air a little bit that some CGI aspects. Did you feel like it was too heavily CGI in some points, or did you feel like it was just minor moments and overall it was fine from a visual standpoint?
I think some of the stuff on Wakanda, like with those creatures, and then bringing in the heavily CGI'd bad guy Minion Bros, mm-hmm. that was just a little bit much. I think the only time it really took me out of it, though, was just some of the fight scenes with the Minion guys.
Okay. Dan, what did you think of from a visual effects or action sequences, CGI standpoint? Did it work, or was there too much CGI at points, or what do you think?
I mean, there are points that I think weren't as sharp. Specifically, I'm thinking of, they still haven't, like, got the making the head in the Iron Man armor look all that real, like, within the when Banner was in the Hulk armor. Like, some of those, like, bits and pieces, like it just felt, you get to kind of see the green screen there a little bit too much. But I don't know, like I thought the CGI was necessary. I don't know, like, you're not going to create those aliens in real life, so I don't know. Like, I never felt that there was too much there. It felt fitting for this, and I thought, you know, most importantly, the stuff with Thanos was just really impressive. And I was a little bit worried about that, because when he showed up in the past, like, he looked a little bit off. He's, even with his helmet, it looks a little bit weird. But there are some moments where, like, you know, he needs to emote, and James Brolin, you know, we didn't mention him, but he was great. Like, I was really impressed with the performance he gave and the motion capture that was done, because it was great. Like, it gave him a personality he was not expecting, and even, you know, it was legitimately just his face emoting. It had those moments, and without that, I don't think he's nearly the character that he is. But, you know, so I think a lot of the effort went into that. Maybe some of the moments in the background and stuff like that weren't as impressive, but, like, you know, there aren't, like, CGI rhinos that look awful. They were with Black Panther. I thought I was fine with most of the special effects.
Yeah, I agree, Dan. I think the stuff that you would probably critique and have gripes about, like Amanda was saying, is more some of the smaller things, like the background characters or some of the alien creatures and that type of stuff. I think the crux of this movie from a visual standpoint was if they were going to be able to pull off Thanos or not, because I think a lot of people had those questions going into it based on sneak peeks of him in other films, etc. Was, are they going to be able to pull off this look? Is he going to be believable? And how is that going to work? And I think where it mattered most, they did get it right from a visual standpoint. Moving on into story, plot, that type of thing, pacing, anything like that, guys. What did you think of the story overall? Was there any plot holes or problems with the story that you guys had? Did you feel like it clicked along at a decent pace? I know one thing that I somewhat had a gripe on was the pace in which we were shifting from one environment to another. And I know you have a lot of characters, so you have to have them somewhat split up. But it just seemed like every other second we were getting another planet or something with a title flopped in front of us. One of which I don't understand why we had to put Wakanda on the screen, like the word Wakanda. Everybody just saw Black Panther. We knew what that was. But I just thought it was a little jarring from a pace standpoint, as far as just going from here to here to here to here to here and kind of keeping track of everything that's going on. And I felt like every time that I was getting comfortable in one environment, we were immediately jettisoned out of that environment to another one. I don't know if there would have been a feasible way to stop that, given what they were trying to do in this film. But I wanted to see what kind of your guys' take was of the overall kind of story arc and how things went from that point. Matt, we'll start with you.
Well, to hit your first point, like, or I guess your middle point, I don't know. Like, they have to show Wakanda's name, because if they don't, it's going to be like freaking Rogue One, where it's like, hey, there's this trading post. Hey, here's this rebel thing. Hey, here's this thing. Hey, here's a planet we're not going to tell you. And hey, it's important because Darth Vader's got a giant castle. Good luck. You'll find it in a source book somewhere, like, or you'll be guessing. Like, you know, only true fans get to know this planet. Like, that crap bothers me. Like, I was so happy when I saw Wakanda, like, even if I recognized it even before they put it up there.
I think, like, it would have been different for me if Black Panther hadn't just came out, like, 2 months ago.
Sure, but like you can't promise that everyone's gonna watch them in order 10
True.
years from now. Or, you know, now we had one of our guys, our friends that we go to a trivia with, Kevin, Amanda, and I go to a trivia with some people. Like he just saw the Avengers, and it was his third or fourth MCU movie he's seen. Like he doesn't know what a Wakanda is. Oh man, I don't know. I didn't have any trouble following it. You know, other than maybe a little bit during that fight scene at the beginning with Ebony Maw, where it's like, okay, so now they're in the park, okay, now they're in the building, now they're on the street. But like as far as the overarching things, like I don't know, like it cut fast, but like it was less disorienting than, and I, you know, I keep going back to it because I've seen it a million times, but like the prequels of Star Wars, like they'll do a cut like to a new planet every 2 or 3 minutes sometimes, and like it's jarring, and they don't have those little titles of where you are, and it becomes a mess. But this one, like I had very little issue, and I think when they did have issue, they kind of played it up with the reality gem, and they made it interesting.
Yeah, that's true. I did like how they worked with some of the gems. I guess that's could be another thing that you guys could discuss too. I guess the way that Thanos had to go about getting the different gems, and kind of some were easier than others, and obviously we had a lot to do in a short time period. So did they handle that well as far as the speed in which he's obtaining these? Obviously, I guess the only weird part for me is it's been like, again, 18 films in 10 years, and he wasn't having a whole lot of luck, it seemed like, and then in one film he gets them all. I don't know if that could have been done differently. But Dan, what did you think of the overall, like, I guess, structure of the story and anything that's been brought up so far?
It did move faster than I was expecting. Like I thought after the first scene, with the opening with, Thanos going through all as Guardians and whatnot, that it would like, okay, well, now we're gonna go to Earth, and now we're gonna get the teams together and figure out the plan, and they're gonna look at all this. I'm like, nope. Here they are. They're already at Earth. Oh, we're out of Earth. Like it did, like go from beat to beat rather quickly. Like it, especially as it was establishing where everyone was going to have their final throwdown with Thanos' forces, and there were a lot of things at play. Like there was, and maybe a little bit no time to breathe for the most part. But I thought it did do a good job of stopping here and there to have some important character beats, especially in the beginning when you get some of the interaction between Scarlet Witch and Vision, some of the Thanos moments, especially the Thor moments, as we mentioned. So there were times here and there, but it was very packed. Like it for a half, two an hour, 2 hour and a half, wow, 2 hours and 30 minutes. It did go by rather quickly. I do wonder, like on a rewatch, if it would feel like a little bit more aggressive in that pacing. But for me, I guess I was so anticipating what was going next, and wondering, like, seeing these people die, seeing these characters die, like it had a level of anticipation, like worry, that I haven't had with the Marvel film. So I wasn't even like, I didn't feel lost, because I was really curious about how this was gonna end, and I thought I had an idea of where it was going. Like I thought, okay, this will end with he gets like three of the gems, and then in the next movie he'll finish them. Or, knowing the trailer is like waiting, okay, well, it can't be done yet because Hulk hasn't shown up, and I saw the trailer and Hulk was in that. So sometimes showing that, watching the trailer can be a benefit because it completely subverts your expectations. So yeah, in long story short, yes, the pacing was really fast, but I thought, overall I never felt it was overly too daunting to kind of keep up with.
Amanda, what did you think? Were you on the edge of your seat the entire film? Did that ever have a moment where you were bored, or how did the story overall work as far as Thanos getting the gems and achieving what he did in all in one film?
It is a tad bit unbelievable that he hasn't been able to do that in how many years now? I mean, like the whole time Gamora was growing up, right? And then all of a sudden now he's got all of them in a few days. But then when it comes to the pacing, I felt like it was moving super fast. I don't know if it's because I was trying to soak so much up in like a short little clip that I felt like I was like, wait, I was just getting into that, and I was really interested in that. Now we're moving, and I want to go back and see more of what we are seeing.
Did you feel like any of the emotional beats that you might have been getting between character moments and things like that were jilted because you didn't get enough time to like resonate on them before you were moving on to something else?
Like Loki's death, I didn't feel shit for Loki's death. I thought that happened pretty fast.
That's interesting, because I guess we can kind of go into that a little bit as far as the emotional beats of the film, because for me, that's one of the ones that there was two deaths that were way more emotional for me than anything else that we see in the film, and they both happen in basically the opening sequence, which were Loki and Heimdall. Like, those two affected me way more because I felt like they got to resonate a little bit, and we got to marinate with it, I guess, for a second, and there was a little bit more of a drawn-out scene for that. Dan and Matt, what do you guys think as far as Loki's death? Do you feel like it was rushed, or any of the deaths overall? Do you feel like, you know, where did the emotion work and where did it not work for you guys?
Oh, man, I didn't feel like it was rushed when we were watching him get strangled to death for, like, a minute and a half. Like, that felt like that drug on for forever. And then what was even more ridiculous was how, like, yeah, he's dead, they wanted to make it, because it was like, he strangles him until he stops moving, and then he keeps holding him by the throat for the rest of, like, the next half of the scene. Like yeah, he's dead, guys. He's dead.
What about any of the other ones? Like, obviously we see a number of different deaths, both in the opening, you know, partially way through, and then obviously at the end, there's a big emotional wallop there. Which ones worked the best for you, Matt, and which ones did you feel like could have used more time, or did they all handle pretty well?
I think the one that had the biggest emotional impact, surprisingly, like, because if you told me before I went in, hey, this is the death that's going to hit you the hardest, I would have been like, no way, was freaking the Vision, just because, like, we have this, like, they build this relationship up the whole movie, and then, like, they have fucking the dude's, like, lady friend kill him. And then, like, Thanos just reverses time and goes, ah, you have to deal with the emotional weight of killing your SO, but then also I'm going to kill him a second time, so enjoy seeing him die twice real quick.
Well, and it was also, like, you sacrificed him, and it was pointless because I'm just going to do this anyway. So that was definitely more of, like, a gut punch from her, if you're looking at it from her character standpoint. Any other ones, Matt, that resonated the most with you?
I mean, Spider-Man, like even though it like, it went fast, and fucking Black Panther, I had, they got me real good, where you see it, what is it, Okoye, right, like, going through the things, and then I'm like, oh no, they're gonna kill Okoye, and then she hits Black Panther, and then he dies, and it's like, what? Like, I almost jumped out of my seat. I did not expect that. Like, I don't know that there was any one of them that didn't hit me, but those are certainly the ones that hit me the hardest.
I think for me, I don't know, and like I said, the Loki and the Heimdall one worked the best for me because I felt like they got just enough time to actually give us a chance to think about it beforehand, afterwards, and that type of stuff. The end death did not have any emotional impact on me whatsoever. I don't know, and it's not because I know that they're not, you know, dead forever, et cetera, et cetera. It had nothing to do with that. It was more so the corner that they kind of put themselves into with how fast they had to go from one to another, which there was no other way to do it because obviously he snapped his finger and we have to have them all happen right away. But it was, again, because we were jumping from one to the other, to the other, to the other, I didn't have a time to have that emotional response, except for maybe a little bit like you guys were talking about with Spider-Man, because they give him a little bit more of a moment than they did with the rest of them. But that was the reason why I felt my emotions were a little bit jilted from that, was just because of how fast they were happening. That in the moment I didn't have that chance to have that reaction. Obviously afterwards, you know, you can resonate that however you do and sit in your, you know, in the parking lot or resonate it at home and kind of reflect on it. But that's why those ones at the beginning had a little bit more of an effect on me than the ones at the end. Dan, which ones worked for you and which ones didn't?
I don't know. Like, actually, it was interesting because the ones at the beginning didn't as much, because I felt like that was a little bit inevitable. Right. You know, I felt like that, you know, that based upon the ending of Ragnarok, I'm like, okay, well, Loki's gonna die, and knowing that, like, Heimdall, he just, even though I love Idris Elba, I like that character, like, I just never really felt a huge connection to that, to him. He's always felt kind of like they never really figured out what they wanted to do with him. And for me, it was all about the Peter Parker, Tom Holland performance in that moment, you know, especially what it means for Tony, you know, and how they built that up. You know, he, from his opening line, talking about how he sees himself as a dad, how he's been going through all this, like, from his vision back in the Age of Ultron, knowing that, you know, seeing all of his friends die, and from, you know, seeing death at the beginning of Avengers, and dealing with the fact that, like, the person that he's been, like, a father figure to is, like, dying in his arms, and, like, all, like, what it meant for him, and what it meant for, and the way that Tom Holland sold it. I just thought that was by far, even though, you know, obviously we know Spider-Man Homecoming 2 is coming, I thought in the moment that really didn't matter, because it sold it both on a character standpoint and performance standpoint. I thought that was effective. I also thought the Gamora moment, yes, was worked really well. And, you know, and it again went to sell the character of Thanos to add additional layer to him. And like, that's one, like, I could see Gamora never coming back. You know, what, cause knowing Zoe Saldana is going to be doing the Avatar movies if they ever come out. So I have a good feeling that, you know, this might actually be, you know, her last hurrah with this. And I think Matt brought up a good point regarding the Vision sequence too, knowing that, like, you see him die, and then it's like, yeah, well, too bad. And turns things around and does it again. Like, that was a pretty gut punch moment too. I think too, at the end, I was just surprised that it was interesting sitting in my audience, and just, I'm like, okay, well, I see what they're doing here. I know what this is going to go, but there are people who are like audibly angry in my theater that they're leaving it where they did. It was like a good type of anger. Like, how could you do that? Like, how, what is this? You know, the fact that they would, and the, you know, and then at the end, even throwing in the Thanos will return, just I think to, you know, rub it in a little bit more. So I just was really, you know, the deaths as a whole, I thought were effective in the fact that they're just going to leave it there. You know, it's been a big thing where people talk about no one ever dies in Marvel films, and I'm sure it'll be a complaint when many of those people come back next movie. But I thought it was kind of a bold move to say, yeah, we're gonna leave it here. And we're gonna see Empire Strikes Back, and we're gonna raise you. And I remember, not to bring Batman v Superman into this, but I remember how big of a deal some people thought it was that they killed Superman at the end. And it's like, yeah, well, we killed like everyone, so or half the people. So I just thought that was, you know, like, wow, they're leaving it there. Is, I didn't expect them to do that. I thought it would get to the point where it was like, oh no, he's got his third gem, and he's gonna get his fourth and fifth one next time, but. They went all the way with it.
Yeah, I thought. Oh, go ahead, Matt.
I want to jump on the back of that Batman v Superman comment, not to dogpile on a terrible movie, but like, like I just do that in for Amanda. Like at the end, like, they kill Superman, but then at the end they're like, but is he dead? Like, at the end of this one, they kill off half the universe, and then it shows Thanos like gardening, like, F you. like just like you say DC's a dour, huh?
I do like a couple things that have been brought up here, Dan. I said that, you know, obviously at the end they say, you know, Thanos will return, and not only was that like an extra like exclamation point on it, I thought that was a genius move too, to kind of really highlight this as Thanos's movie and his kind of story, because I think that is something that they did very well with this one. I'm wondering, do you think people would have had a different reaction, and obviously the story and what's going to happen in the future films dictated what they had to do, but if, obviously we're going to have half of the people get killed, which is obviously something most of us didn't predict. We were talking about like, oh, which two or three characters are going to die, and my prediction didn't even appear in the movie, but no, I don't think anybody had this many people dying in it, but do you think it would have been more effective for some people had they been able to have the half that died been the more of those that were being predicted to die kind of thing? Like, you know, if you have Captain America, Iron Man, Hulk, you know, not necessarily all the originals, but or more of the side characters or something like that. Like, was it problematic making Spider-Man and Black Panther two of the ones that you killed off in this, knowing that those were two of the most recent additions to this? I'm not saying it affected me. I'm just saying, obviously, there's been a lot of people complaining, oh, we know they're coming back because we have this movie and that movie. Could they have avoided that altogether by doing a different selection of who disappeared? I mean, obviously, you know, Samuel L. Jackson has been around for a long time, and some of these other guys have been around for a long time, or you would have had, like, had Hawkeye been in the film, he's more of a, somewhat of a, not as essential character as some of these other guys, like, I guess according to some. So could they have picked smarter, or were they handcuffed by what was happening in future movies, so that's just how it had to be? Dan, what were your thoughts on that?
I think it was, again, going back to, I think what's going to happen in next film was the fact that knowing that some of their contracts are up, they've been in this, that they didn't use those characters because I have a strong feeling in next film that many of those characters will die,
right.
And it be permanent. So perhaps, but like I would have hated if like the way that Captain America dies in this was like because of that finger snap, and then I would still know he's coming back. Like it's still, I don't think it would have, if it was like if that happened and you know every character that you was killed were characters like, okay, well that's how they're gonna end Tony Stark being Iron Man, that's how they're gonna end Captain America being Captain America, and you know Drax or something of that nature. If they just pick and choose, like, okay, well they're not doing Black Panther because there's Black Panther 2 or Spider-Man, I thought the choices they made will lead to a better film next time,
right.
Even if that means yeah people have an idea that okay these people are coming back, I'd rather it do it the way that they did, because that would be a really unsatisfying way for me, in my opinion, to like kill some of the major characters just to bring them back to potentially have them have a send off next movie anyways.
Right. No, I agree. I think they're the ones that are making the decisions, and they have a reason for it, and they know what kind of all the cards are down the road. So it's obviously going to make sense. And it comes to back to this point where, you know, some of these are not, I don't know if you can view this as a standalone film. Obviously, it's something that's been built up for a long time for a reason, and it's something that's going to continue on for a good amount of time still. So you kind of got to view it in that respect. Let's go around just one more time. Final thoughts, anything that you haven't been able to get off your chance or off your chest, nitpicks, favorite moments, anything that you haven't been able to talk about, or just like your overall grade, I guess, for Infinity War. Amanda, what do you think?
Dude, I think we talked a lot about this. I don't know if there's anything more I need to say that everybody in the planet hasn't already said. Drax is his ability to stand very still is outstanding. I'll say that.
Are you excited for what's coming next?
Yeah, dude, I'm not looking forward to waiting. I feel like we were waiting forever for this, and they're like, oh, hey, wait. You're going to wait some more.
Obviously, there was an end credit scene as well. You can comment on that, too, if you want. Matt, what are your thoughts overall on the film in closing, and what's your excitement level for the next couple of Marvel films coming up?
I'm always at maximum excitement for, like, the Marvel movies. Like, I'm super curious about what they're going to do with Captain Marvel. I'm curious as to what they're going to do with Ant-Man. Is this going to be set before? Like, are they going to, like...
Yeah, they said it's set before.
Like, how much before? Is it going to explain where Ant-Man was during this? You know, very curious about that. Is Hawkeye going to be in that one? Maybe? But, like, I don't know. I don't have anything to say about it, like, that I haven't already said, other than just saying, like, hey, this is really good, and, like if you haven't seen it, what are you doing? One, not seeing it, and two, listening to this.
Dan, I'll let you close it out then as far as your final thoughts on Infinity War and the direction that we're headed here in Captain Marvel or some of the other Marvel films that are coming out and leading up to the second Infinity War film.
Yeah, it makes me wonder kind of one of, you know, this was originally titled, you know, Infinity War Part 1, and then they changed it, and then they're going to come up with a new title, and then they said, well, the next title would give it away. So it helped me, like, racking my brain of thinking what could they call it, because they've usually, you know, each movie's been typically titled after some sort of major comic, even if it didn't follow that comic story, like Age of Ultron, for example. So I was just trying to think of what it could possibly call, like, something like Avengers Disassembled, which was, like, the end of the Avengers title that led into New Avengers, which could kind of fit. It could also be Avengers Forever, because Avengers and then it's Avengers 4 and then Forever, which would be, you know, a horrible pun, but hey, there's worse things. I have part of me thinks it might be called Heroes Reborn, which was a story in the 90s, but because that way, I think the benefit of calling it Avengers Heroes Reborn is that it's like, yes, we know that you know these people are coming back, let's get that out of the way, but it's the journey of how we get there that's important. So I just, not that like a title matters, but it had me racking my brain of what could they possibly call it. At the end of the day, watch it just be Infinity War Part 2 and that be it. But I'm excited, yeah, especially for Captain Marvel, you know, to see, because it's been a character they've been trying to make a big deal in the comics for some time, and she's never really got to the level of like a Wonder Woman, but maybe the movie would put it away. So Yeah, I'm really excited. I wanted to see it again, and I haven't seen it a second time. I wanted to, I haven't had the opportunity. So, but I do wonder, like, what will be kind of those standout, like, moments that will live on, like we've seen with the, you know, Avengers original film. I think a few have, I think, already, especially all the memes that have been starting. But, yeah, I'm excited to see how this all ends, knowing that next, you know, this time next year we'll be seeing the actual conclusion and what that means, like how exactly do they go from here. It has to be exciting.
Yeah, I agree. And I think maybe one of the best things that did come out of this was the disappearing memes, because there's a lot of creative people out in the world that have been making those into some very humorous things, for sure. Obviously did very well at the box office, did very well at Rotten Tomatoes as well. Currently has, I think, like an 84% on Rotten Tomatoes, and is second on the year right now behind Black Panther, but obviously has not had the same amount of time that Black Panther had to make money. So two films already over $400 million for the year, and very soon two films over $500 million. So we'll be interested to see what is left for the Marvel Cinematic Universe still this year, and then obviously moving into next year with Captain Marvel and Infinity War, whatever they name it. We'll have to talk more about that at a later point. When we come back next time for another episode, we'll be going back to our Kevin Smith retrospective. We are up next is Jersey Girl for that retrospective, so that'll be coming up there. We also have some fun other things planned here that you guys might want to keep your eyes out for as we continue and put an exclamation point on the video game spotlights and move on to some new spotlights, possibly, which is something that you may be able to take part in. So keep your eyes peeled for that type of stuff. Amanda, if someone wants to tweet to you a question or comment based on anything you said about Infinity War, how would they do that?
You can reach me on the Twitters at Hard Candy Mandy Eyes No Eyes.
Dan, how about you?
I am Over Revolt.
Matt?
I'm at Friendly Scent.
I'm at Optimus Solo. The show handle is at Cinema Geekcast, so you can tweet us all and en masse, I guess, if you want to. Also, obviously, keep an eye out for all the other things that are happening at Geekcast Radio Network, including a lot of content coming from Dan in the realm of comic books with his other show, and a lot of interesting things that he's been doing over there. So keep an eye out for that as well. So that does it for this week. Tune in next time for another chance to listen to the Cinema Geeks.